Game On on 2FM. With Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Thanks to the amazing Jenny Green. Back with you tomorrow at 3 o'clock to kick off your weekend. It's Thursday, the 24th of September, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, it's day one at the Irish Open. We're live to Galgorm Castle for all the day's action.
Back over to 15 and this time, Shane Lowry.
Good tee shot from Lowry. Pin front left. No, he hates it. Now he's in trouble.
Can't help but wonder if it wouldn't have been much easier for him if there had been big crowds here and, you know, all the jet lag or whatever from last week and the energy that went into the US Open. The crowd here would have just given him a little lift.
Jeff Shepherd has our eye on America after a dramatic start to the NFL season, plus a major head coach appointment in college football.
If you don't know how great our next guest is, he'll be more than happy to tell you. If you don't like watching NFL players celebrate, you can probably blame him, because a whole generation of athletes wanted to be just like him. He ran faster backwards than most people run forwards, and his outfit today is probably worth more than all of the Danettes' wardrobes combined. Please welcome primetime Deion Sanders.
That is quite an introduction, actually. That's something like you'd say, though, that an introduction like that.
I love the nickname, Primetime.
Plus, we've the latest as Dundalk FC continue their European journey, and we explored the fixture pile-up for dual club players with Tipperary's Aisling Maloney.
Game on 2FM.
Yeah, looking forward to that. It seems a right mess. You can text us on 51552 or tweet us at GameOn2FM. Marie, where do we start? Big night for Dundalk, Irish Open's underway. We have to give Rob Kearney a mention, though, don't we?
Yeah, when he was when that guy was saying that Sanders can run backwards faster than a lot of people, I was actually thinking about the multi-talented Rob Kearney, because, in fairness, he's some athlete, Donica.
Yeah, he is. To be fair, obviously the most decorated Irish rugby player of all time, Grand Slams, European Cups, you name something you can achieve in Irish rugby, Rob Kearney's done it. And today he penned a farewell letter, and not only, I know it was kind of put down to Leinster fans, but I think the good guys cross over into green, and he'll be remembered by everyone in Irish rugby for exactly what you're saying, Marie, for just being an incredible talent. I was lucky enough to share the pitch with him, and you kind of earn respect for being a good teammate. But what Rob was unbelievably helpful for making the pitch smaller, if you know it. Like he made you a better player by just really smart talk and helping you out. So yeah, it is. For me, I actually think it's disappointing to see him go. I know the Irish system, it gets ruthless at the end, and we got to bring a conveyor belt to young talent through, and I agree with that. But when you see someone of his calibre, I think there's loads still in him, and I hope he keeps going.
So, okay, if he wasn't to go away and he was to get an extension of some sort here, like, what, you know, what role does he play? Because he's not the starter anymore.
Yeah, and look, and that's probably the thing. And look, more so than New Zealand, we have massive loyalties to where we're from, whereas in New Zealand, they don't mind playing with other provinces and other clubs. But seeing Rob Kearney in any other colour bar blue is just wrong. So the rumours around the place is Western Force, which would keep him in blue, and I think that would be an incredible signing. Western Force have struggled, and he's a type of player you could do with. Just a brilliant pro as well, Marie, to have around the environment. And when I was young, we were lucky to have Jim Williams come in from the ACT to show us what good is. You know what I mean? To show us how to train properly, how to prepare properly. And I think the Western Force, you know, they've never really lit it up in kind of super rugby, and I think having guys like him around would be brilliant for their environment, because look, he's a winner.
You just wonder now with the current situation if it does go ahead, because there's so many variables at the moment and international travel is one of them. So look, we wish him all the best anyway, and as you said, he's been a great servant to Irish and to Leinster rugby as well.
Yes.
Now, speaking of servants to rugby, Joy Neville will become the first woman to perform TMO duties in a major international competition when Wales face Georgia and Scotland take on Fiji in the Autumn Nations Cup. So we know that Joy has been breaking glass ceilings for her whole life, and she's continuing to do it, and she is going to make another record when she does this. Let's hear from her.
Was it a surprise that I was involved as a TMO? Absolutely, but all the same, extremely honoured to be involved at that level. To be honest, it's probably when I look back, when I'm finished, that I'll probably properly comprehend and really understand my achievements, but for now, it's just about going in there and doing a job and doing it well. So my priority now is to get as much practice as I possibly can, so that I'm not remembered for the wrong reasons. The last thing we want is a try, no try situation where there's a clear foot and touch and it hasn't been scrutinised or looked at. So just need to get the job done and do it right.
Tonica, TMO, that is a tough job.
Well, she'll be brilliant at it. Normally the TMO goes off and makes a cup of tea while the game's on and then they come back looking for him. That won't be the case with Joy Neville. She's going to be a brilliant assistant. And look, we chat about gender in sport so much, and what I love about this is it's just the best person for the job. She is a fantastic ref. I was lucky enough, I played for the Babas against Tonga. She was on the line and I remember just her communication was brilliant, and she made it easy as players, because she's the experience of being there herself on the pitch. You know, normally refs feel like they don't have to coach, and you don't want them to do that either, but you do want them to leave the game flow and help you out, and she certainly does that. So, but for me, I brought my kids up to watch Con Lansdowne and she was reffing it, and I just think it's so good to have a woman in a leadership role so that everyone can look up. And I was there with Jake and my three little girls, and they saw that day that Joy Neville is in charge. You know what I mean? She's the boss there. And I think that's a powerful thing to have. And I think, when you've the right people in the right places, and she certainly is. And it's brilliant news as well. We shouldn't forget Nigel Owens is going to make his 100th cap, test cap, which is phenomenal, to be fair to me. Started in 2003 as well. So he's a brilliant ref, a super guy. And I think, rugby changes so much, rules changes so much, but to be able to evolve like he's done and like Joy's done is a credit to them. So it's good news.
Yeah, they're very important people and we need more good ones of them. Now, it is the first day of the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, RTE Sports. Greg Allen is in Galgorm Firs. Greg, what was the day's action like?
Well, firstly, the conditions, I think, were probably the talking point of the morning. It started off flat, calm. It looked like it was going to be a nice day. Then we heard that there was a thunderstorm shower about 15 miles away. So we were looking around the clouds the whole day to see what was going to hit us. But nothing did, fortunately, except a cool wind, almost cold wind, almost wintry, and about a 20, 25 mile an hour wind at times. And it really has given us a scoreboard, which is, I suppose, unexpected insofar as there are only, I think, the last time I counted, and I'm going to count again exactly, 19 players under par figures. That's out of 120. And two-thirds of the field are over par. And this was a course which, on the face of it, looks as though it's gettable, because we saw Dean Burmester, first match out this morning, the very first three ball on the course. He gets to 7 under after 12, out in 30, birdies the first three holes of the back nine. I'm not saying we're thinking 59, but, if he birdies four of the last six holes, it's a 59. But nobody really, I think, threatened it during the day. Saw Stephen Gallagher getting to 5 under after 8. But Burmester ended up double bogeying the 17th in his round of 65, gives him the joint lead with England's Jordan Smith, who compiled a very steady round of 65. So they're the lead mark, 5 under par, Burmester and Smith. England's Toby Tree, who's played in this golf course in the Northern Ireland Open before several times when it's a Challenge Tour event. So that local knowledge probably helped him to his round of 66. Stephen Gallagher is still out there. He's 4 under with 3 holes to play, tied for third place with Toby Tree. And then in the group on 3 under par, probably one of the more unexpected players that you would expect to find at the top of the Irish tree, so to speak, here, James Sugrue, the amateur champion from last year. And James only got an invitation to play in the Irish Open after Lee Westwood, his playing partner at the US Open last week, found out from James that he wasn't in the Irish Open, and then went into the media scrum and told the journalist that he was surprised that James didn't get an invitation to play in the Irish Open. Lo and behold, 2 days later, there's an invitation in James Sugrue's inbox. And James Sugrue made the most of that today. 5 birdies, a really good ball striking round, hold an 18-footer and a 22-footer on the 11th and 15th greens to help him to that round of 67, and a nice birdie on the last as well. So Sugrue is the leader of the Irish on 67, 3 under. He's 2 off the leaders of the Open. That is Jordan Smith and Dean Burmester on 5 under. Damien McGrain shot around a 70. Damien these days is a club professional in Carlo, practices occasionally, and he's the best, he's the best of the Irish professionals here. Jonathan Caldwell shot around a 71. Paddy Carrington's out there playing 18, one over par, but he was hitting a provisional ball off the 18th tee, so that doesn't sound good. So possibly a 72 or a 73 for Paddy. Tom McKibben, the teenage amateur player, a lot of hopes for him in the future, around a 73. That's okay, because tomorrow's cut mark could be around four over par. Gavin Moynihan, four over after a 74. Mark Power, another talented amateur, four over after 11. And then comes the group on 75, which includes, unexpectedly, Shane Lowry. Round of 75, eight bogeys, bogeyed the third hole, and from then on, there just didn't seem to be any feel to his game. We could make excuses for him. We could say that, you know, coming back from the United States was on Monday after a really heavy run of tournaments into a very big, obviously major championship last weekend is something that you could put in his in his excuse. He wasn't making that excuse, by the way. He just doesn't. He doesn't believe that. He just realizes that it was a day when things didn't go well for him, and he hopes to make the cut tomorrow with a round in the 60s. 75 also for Paul Dunne, 75 for Colin Moriarty, and bizarrely, Cormac Sharvin, who was 15th in the Irish Open last year, had a squeak at getting in the top five in the final day, played a lovely tournament and was the best Irishman in Lahinch. Today he shot a round of 83. And that's about the story of the day so far.
Okay, Greg, well, before we get into what went right for Sugar and what went wrong for Shane, let's hear from both of them.
It was pretty solid all around, to be honest. I put myself in good position because I hit it so well after tee. I think I hit two bad tee shots on 1 and 18. But yeah, I was pretty happy. I gave myself some good chances. Could have, obviously, you know, there's very few times you come off the course when you're completely happy and you held everything. Missed a couple of, I suppose, outside chances coming in. But yeah, we hit a good birdie down the last, considering I hit it down the left in the trees and hacked it out to wedge distance and still made birdie. So yeah, happy all around.
You're here for an unusual sort of set of circumstances. Tell me about what happened at the US Open last week. You were playing with Bubba Watson and Lee Westwood. You must have thought all your Christmases had come, and then Lee Westwood made Santa Claus look like someone who doesn't give presents.
Yeah, no, we were just on my second hole of the day. I asked Lee, was he playing in this, and he said no, and he assumed that I was, and I said I wasn't playing, and he thought that I wasn't playing because I wasn't travelling home, and then I told him that I wasn't playing because I had no invitation. And he was shocked at that, and thankfully he went in and he did a bit for me in the media tent, and said that he was surprised with me not getting an invitation, and a couple of days later an invitation comes in the email. So
the Masters still to come. Of course you've got the Irish Open, the next three rounds to come. It's a very exciting prospect that you turn pro after the Masters, and that's going to happen more than likely. It is going to happen.
Yeah, look, it definitely will happen, whether it's the Monday after it or whether it's in the new year. I'm not too sure yet. I suppose it all kind of depends on what I can get as a pro, and maybe it's, you know, better to stay amateur for another while. I'm not too sure, to be honest. It's hard to plan ahead, especially this year. You know, you don't know what's around the corner, but yeah, hopefully. I'm just looking forward to a good November in Augusta.
Pretty bad, like it was just, you know, it was like a comedy of errors out there. It was every time, you know, I made some really bad decisions, I executed my shots really, really badly, and you know, I really struggled on the greens, and you know, it's not easy to shoot a score like that when you deeply, you know, really want to do well, but sure, look, it is what it is now, and I can't do anything about it, and I have to go out there and fight tomorrow and try and make the cut, and then, you know, you never know what the weekend, because like it's only going to be this temperature all weekend. This golf course is not easy. I think in single digits will win the tournament, so look, we'll see how it goes.
Greg, we'll get to Shane Lowry, but James Sugrue, just from Lee Westwood to do that, just it's fantastic to hear, isn't it? A fellow pro looking out for an amateur.
Yeah, and Lee Westwood is, you know, he's such a senior figure and so well respected that when he said that, clearly his message was heard, and I think probably it was thought, why would we not be giving an invitation to the man who won the amateur championship in 2019? The amateur championship is, you know, arguably the biggest amateur tournament in the world alongside the US amateurs. And James Sugrue has, really been, I suppose, denied some of the privileges that you get from being the amateur champion. You're supposed to play in the Masters in April. You're supposed to play in the US Open in June. Instead, you know, his entire season has been, like every other golfer, professional or amateur, been completely skewed by the COVID-19 crisis. But his big reward was this year for winning the amateur championship. And it was, it did seem odd that he wasn't given an invitation in this year when he had received so many invitations to play in other events and couldn't play in them. And here was the Irish Open and he didn't get an invitation. Then someone's attention was drawn to it by a certain Lee Westwood. And in the inbox 2 days later is the invitation. And rightly so. And I think James had a point to prove today. And my goodness, did he prove it. And off the tee, he was rock solid. And around here, this is a driving golf course. You've got to put the ball into play because the rough is not far off US Open rough. And he's a very good ball striker. Put it nicely, 67, two off the lead. And that's those leaders, as I said, Jordan Smith and Dean Burmester. Just before I say anything else, Paddy Carrington found his ball in the 18th. So he shot around a 71, which is one over par. And he's tied for 38th place out of 120 players. And when you consider that it's 7 months since he played a tournament of any kind, this is a difficult scoring day. A 71 is a pretty good return.
Craig, I saw him interviewed post-round and he was laughing and he was delighted with how he'd started.
Yeah, and, well, Patrick was laughing all the way around and joking. And that's probably deliberate. I think he went out with his great pal and brother-in-law, Ronan, and said, look, we can't have high expectations today. I haven't played any round of golf that's been any way competitive for 7 months. I've got a bockety knee. You might have seen him limping. He was on the treadmill, and he's got something like, I think, a bone bruise in his knee. So he probably went out with the lowest expectations, took all the slings and arrows of his round, which included a 7, by the way, and shot around a 71. I think he's rightly happy with his round. Nice to see Patrick Harrington at 49 years of age. And remember, he was supposed to be stewarding the European team to this, about this time, it was exactly probably opening ceremony time to within a couple of hours of the Ryder Cup. That's what he should be doing this week. Instead, he's battling to shoot a decent first round in an Irish Open, which I suppose is a decent reward in the end.
It's good to 71. See him enjoying himself anyway and not dwelling on what should be and could be. And what about Shane? Can he get back on track now, Greg?
Yeah, I think today was an aberration. His caddy, Bo Martin, knows this course very well, but Shane didn't. And he played one round yesterday in flat cam conditions, and today there's a 20-mile-an-hour wind blowing, and, you know, that's a different task altogether. So he now knows what this golf course is like to play in wind and with a card in his hand rather than a practice round. And I think tomorrow he needs to shoot 68, 69 to make the cut. 68, I think, will definitely make it. 69 might make it. That's one under par, two under par, sort of that type of round. And to be honest, if he can't make that type of round happen in one of the first two rounds, he probably won't be challenging to win in any case. So, you know, it'd be lovely to see him shoot 65 tomorrow and get himself into the mix a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Greg, we'll chat to you tomorrow and you might update us on all that's going on. Thanks for joining us on Game On. We're going to take a quick break and we're back with a Gaelic football.
Game On on 2FM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way. Game On. GAA.
Now, welcome back. For the last couple of days, Tipperary football star Aisling Maloney has been highlighting a fixtures conflict that will see her club Kerr contest two county finals, Camogie and ladies football, in just 26 hours. Aisling joins us now along with Emma Duffy of the 42. Aisling, it's almost the million dollar question really, but how is this still happening?
It's hard to fathom, really. It's really hard to understand that. I suppose it probably comes down to lack of communication, really. It's quite disappointing that we've already went through this on the 12th and 13th of September. We played the Junior A Camogie semi-final on the Saturday, followed by the football final on the Sunday. And here we are, supposed to be looking forward to a week of a county final, and we're faced with this double clash once again. So I just don't know. It's just hard to grasp this, because this match could be changed for us, but it's just we feel like we're not being accommodated and player welfare issues are at a high.
Aisling, just from a player's point of view, you're right there. Like, the week of a final, you've enough on without even fighting for player welfare issues.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm absolutely exhausted. And I think after tonight now, the phone has have to go away, because, well, at the start of the week as well, we said we'd just take a stance at to see where we'd get. I suppose we're trying to show some light in ourselves as dual players. We have 16 dual players on both sides with 10 starters. So it has taken its toll all week. I suppose we just wanted to make a stand to raise awareness about this, that it is going on. It's not just going on for us, and we're not cribbing and crowing about it here in Tipperary. Since I put up the tweets on Twitter during the night, I've got so many private messages of people talking about it and appreciating that we're standing up for ourselves in it.
And that's the point there, really, though, that Aisling's making, isn't it? It's, you know, those DMs that she's been getting from other players. We've spoken about this on numerous occasions. It's something that isn't getting fixed or getting better or going away. It's an ongoing problem that is causing an awful lot of stress to players and damage as well. And player welfare should be at the centre of it, but it seems almost like it's the furthest away.
Absolutely, Marie. Like, you know, it's a thing year on year, club and county level. And, you know, when I got a message from Aisling the other day explaining it, it came as no surprise whatsoever. And as she said, she's got so many messages since from other people in similar positions. I know Larkin here in Cavan, they actually have a county championship Camogie final on the Saturday this weekend, and then they have an Ulster football quarterfinal up in Donegal on Sunday. So, like, that's just another example alongside Care, but it's happening year on year, week on week. It is obviously really, really disappointing for players because they want to play both sports. They want to play football. They want to play Camogie. They want to play other sports away from Gaelic games. But ultimately, it's just, you know, the two associations, I suppose, a bit at loggerheads. It feels like things can be rectified pretty simply, but it's just not happening. Just look at the Care girls and Aisling's situation there. It seems like a pretty straightforward thing to just move the Camogie game until next weekend, but it's just not happening.
So, Aisling, just to give a bit of context, you're expected to play a county Camogie final at 12 o'clock on Saturday, and then the following day you have a football final on the Sunday at 2 o'clock. So that's 26 hours between games for, as you said, 16 of your dual players. It's an awful lot to ask, isn't it?
Yeah, it is an awful lot to ask, and I suppose, well done, Cat. We already did it on the 12th and 13th of September, and we kept it quiet. We said nothing. We said we'd suffer the consequences in hope that we would be looking forward to two finals. Thankfully, we survived that weekend. We just bounced across the line with the football. We were down 9 points of 5 minutes to go. So we went through the week of feeling, you know, the effects, the knock-on effects of it. I can't speak here and just make up that we had player welfare issues that week, but I suppose a few of us are involved in county setups, and we do train. We have hard training sessions. We know what it is like to train hard, and I suppose even from being from county setup, like, the last week has just been so exhausting, and the week after that double clash, it was so exhausting as well. But I just don't know what we have to do to kind of... like, I just think, as Emma says, this can be so easily solved. I just don't know why, and it's just so, so confusing for all of us back here in Care, and I suppose for any other club players across the country, really. Just simple communication, and these issues could be solved.
And Emma, what have the Camogie and Ladies Football Associations come out with?
So, I suppose this is obviously Aisling's situation, and Care's situation is at a county level, but then if you're looking at the Ladies Football Association and the Camogie Association, they've kind of come out that they're working together, you know, to do all they can, I suppose, to accommodate the dual player, but it's not possible in every sense. I suppose we even saw Congress earlier this year. There was a bit of noise and eruptions after it. There was a motion, it wasn't passed, for full support of the dual player, but I suppose the Camogie Association and the LGFA separately afterwards came out and said that they did support the dual player. It was just the wording of the motion didn't fit what they had in store, basically. And look, I do understand that it is difficult to, I suppose, please everyone. When you're looking at this situation with Aisling's team, look, there's 16 girls who are playing both codes, and there's 10 starters on both teams. Like, it doesn't make sense why this can't happen. And, you know, even as Aisling said yesterday in the piece that I did with her in the 42, one of the Aherlow girls put up a tweet saying that, you know, the result of the football final will be in jeopardy now because Care aren't at full strength on Sunday, you know, that kind of way. So it is kind of beggar's belief at this stage that this is happening, and it's been flagged so many times before and it seems so easily avoided. But look, that's it. What can you do?
Ashling, the Tipperary Camogie Board have said that they have carefully planned a full programme of activity, that they're looking at their county teams beginning action on the weekend of this October 17th, and that panels have prepared, and that they want to give all the Camogie girls adequate time to prepare for that. Do you accept that as a valid excuse for not moving the game?
No, we don't accept that at all, to be honest. They say that there is no free weekends, but last weekend was actually a Camogie weekend. The 19th and 20th, both the intermediate final and the senior final was played. We don't understand why our junior final could have been played then when it was flagged 3-4 weeks ago at the county board. Also, next weekend is also free and the weekend after that, because Camogie doesn't extend on to Munster or All-Ireland finals. So, also with county starting as well, that's not starting for 3 weeks. It's 3 weeks away until Camogie is starting, sorry. So, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense, to be honest.
Emma, you mentioned the associations working together to help solve this problem, but shouldn't they be working together full stop so this doesn't happen?
Yeah, that's the thing, Donica. I don't know what's going to happen. I suppose they've kind of made it fairly clear that they're happy to just work alongside each other but not come under the one umbrella. And that's something, I suppose, even just with the Camogie Association National Development Plan, I did a few interviews with Sinead McNulty, the CEO there, and you know, it's something that she is very, very passionate about, this Gaelic Games family, but she does respect that they are separate entities, and that's the way it has been. And I suppose the LGFA and the Camogie Association separately have worked so hard to build this thing from the ground up, to now go under the one umbrella with the GAA. You know, it's not something that they really want to do, but I do feel for players it could be the best solution. It definitely is the best solution, I suppose. So look, who knows what's going to happen, but when things like this occur, it really throws that into question.
It does feel like that's a million miles away, though, Emma. Just everything over the last few years, and even where we are now with the pandemic. You know, there's been so much talk about a one GAA model, and you know, Liam O'Neill, when he was president of the GAA, did a huge amount to try and raise that. But there wasn't really a huge amount of progress, and there hasn't been a huge amount of progress, and it's getting more frustrating, I think, with every single passing year. But Ashling, I know that when you started out this week and you wanted to raise this issue and to highlight it and take a stand, you've done that now. A lot of people in positions of power know about this story. The media have covered it extensively. There is no progress for ye, though, because you're still in the same situation. And the games are, you know, it's Thursday now and it's only a couple of days away. What are you going to do?
So I suppose we've come to the point now where our officers from Clare Camogie Club have stepped in. They've actually sent a letter to the county board saying that they have made a decision not to field a team due to player welfare issues, that they felt that it was their responsibility to protect their players. So that's the situation as of now, since today. So it's really upsetting that we have to do this. Like, I know we've dual players playing, but we've also girls on the Camogie team who don't play football and girls on the football team who don't play Camogie. And I feel both sets of players are missing out on this. But look, at the start of the week, I set out to make a stand, and just someone out there would stand up and be counted. But look, here we are. We're having to make this decision. We're all exhausted all week in the club. But here we are now. We're supposed to be looking forward to a county final, but just dealt with exhaustion all week.
And actually, it's almost about more than just this one match, isn't it? It's about encouraging the next generation to play. It's about keeping people safe. It's about enjoyment. It's about fun. It's about all those things, the ethos of the associations that everybody goes out and plays for. It's not about going in on a week of a game and feeling like you do now and having to do what you're doing now.
Certainly not. I think sport is there to be enjoyed and not to be kind of going around and having to get into controversy like this, because it shouldn't really have to happen. But since I've been younger, like, I've been encouraged. Care is very much so a dual club. I've been encouraged by the mentors and trainers in the club and BOCOs, and by my parents in particular, to play both football and Camogie. And I suppose when you're promoting at a young age and then it gets to this level and things like this happen, there is going to be, dropout is going to occur, and sometimes you wonder, like, why you are playing the boat. And I don't know, it's very confusing, and it's just so frustrating now that we're sitting here this evening. Feel sorry for the girls who don't play football and how much they're missing out and how much they've trained all year for it. But look, at least we've raised awareness about it, and we hope that something like this will not happen again. and for all those clubs across the country, maybe a hit home to other club players and probably organisations too, that this is highlighted now and it just can't occur in this day and age.
Ashling, Marie is right. The most important thing is fun and enjoyment. But you have that base of fitness and probably could manage to play these games like you've done before within 26 hours. But I'd say within that duel, the 16 girls you're on about, some of them could easily pick up injuries that they'll take into employment.
Yeah, 100%. And anyway, I suppose, Donica, with you and Robbie, I suppose you never ask to go out and play a match on a Saturday and a match on a Sunday. It just doesn't happen anymore. It's just your body can't do these things. We're all amateur at the end of the day. We're not professional sports people. To be able to, as you said, girls pick up injuries on weekends and if they face work during the week. So, I don't know, it's really, really confusing. We've one girl, Roisin Harrell, who's involved with County Camogie. She's given her lifetime Camogie, her parents as well. And I suppose for her tonight, playing with County Camogie and probably not, seeing an issue. Maybe what if she picks up an ACL injury at the weekend, God forbid, and she's missing one of their star players for County, and I suppose the County Board obviously mustn't see that. So it's really confusing and it's hard to stress. Just talking on behalf of the girls all week, I'm so proud to be from Clare, I'm proud to be talking on behalf of them and every club player across Ireland on this matter, just to finally put a stand to it once and for all.
It's pretty devastating to have to hear from one of the country's greatest sportswomen in that situation where she cannot go out and play a county final for player welfare reasons, and just even for her to be in that situation and her teammates and even the opponents as well, because they don't want to win a county final that way.
No, absolutely, yeah.
Emma?
They both agree.
Go on, Emma.
No, I think obviously it's hugely disappointing. The week build up to a county final is probably the best week of a player's year, that way. And they want to enjoy it and enjoy everything that comes with it rather than be completely worried about, having to play two games in 26 hours, worrying about injury, worrying about just burnout, and obviously having to completely take a stand like this and go to the media and do interview after interview after interview, and you feel like you're making no progress whatsoever. So it's hugely disappointing, and even for fans too, because they want to see two brilliant spectacles at the weekend. They don't want to see, as Ash said yesterday in a piece of us, girls coming in on Sunday absolutely wrecked from their 60 minutes Camogie the day before, and the excitement and or the devastation, whatever it is afterwards, the highs or the lows of winning or losing, and to have to come out and pick themselves up and go again on Sunday and play a top level game. And but it doesn't make for the best thing from any perspective across the board. And then obviously the opposing team too, they want to go out and they want to play a good hard game, and you mightn't get that from a team who have pretty much, the majority of them have played a high level game the day before. So it's hugely disappointing, but mostly disappointing for the players involved. Whatever about the fans, whatever about the opponents, whatever about us watching on, it's the girls who are at the heart of this, who are directly affected and who are after having a really, really tough week. But that's without a ball being kicked or without a slipper being poked. It is really, really tough. But you can only wish them the best of luck this weekend, and please God, this could be the end of it.
Ashing, inter-county football is probably the furthest thing on your mind right now, but it is going to come around very, very quickly. How are you feeling about heading into the new season, the winter season?
Yeah, I suppose we're all delighted to have games back at the same time. We're looking forward to a very young team again this year. There's about 8 or 9 not playing from last year's starting intermediate team. So it's all very exciting. I'm looking forward to getting back in with the girls there and getting back playing. I suppose it's a quick season as well. It's nice and short, so the pressure is on to try to stay in and win games. So we're all looking forward to now back home to get going on it.
And Emma, you must be as well, although there probably are a few concerns. We had Sinead Ahern on the show a little while ago just talking about the situation with there being no dressing rooms and showers and that after games. And we always have the problems with venues and facilities anyway, and just trying to get fixtures done during the winter is obviously a bit of a concern as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that Mick Bowen originally flagged, I think, on the show a good few weeks back, or months even at this stage, when the prospect of winter football came into it and the inter-county season from October to Christmas. Venues and facilities are
her combine early in the height of summer, never mind, you know, the struggles of trying to get floodlit pitches in the depth of winter. And when it comes down to it, it's unfortunately not going to be the ladies' team that's going to get the facility. But yeah, look, with football, intercounty football and Camogie and GA across the board coming back, it is really exciting. Please God, we'll get there. But the club season has been fantastic. Like, you know, it's been, even just as a club player myself, just it's been really enjoyable. It's a short window, you know, you're only committed for a few weeks and, you know, it's all go. So I'd say it could be the same come county, you know, it'll be all hands on deck. So hopefully now we're in for an exciting few weeks if all goes ahead.
Yeah, I agree with you. Hopefully we will anyway. Look, Aisling and Emma, thanks so much for joining us. And Aisling, as we said, it is Thursday. There are a couple of days to go. We really hope that you are accommodated and you get to go out and play those two county finals, because that is what you've all been working so hard to do. Thanks so much for joining us. Best of luck.
Thanks, Ellen.
Thanks, guys.
Game on QFM with Green Fern. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on QFM.
You were going to, did you really want to coach Florida State?
Yes. I'm going to be a head coach of college football next year.
Where?
Somewhere. I'm that definite. I'm that assured that I am. This is a desire. This is something that is my calling. I'm going to coach college football. Head coach, not coach. Head coach.
Do you have a deal in place right now?
No, I'm not going to say that. But I'm going to be a coach. They have to understand I come with some stuff. I come with not luggage, but I come with, I want to win. I want to do it a certain way. My son is a phenomenal quarterback. My youngest son, you know, has a plethora of offers. We're going to visit the U Saturday.
Are you a package deal with your son?
No. I've never been a package deal with anybody. Been a heck of a package. I've been a heck of a package. And I had some heck of a deals, but never not together.
So I'm intrigued with this as a head coach.
Yeah, I am.
What kind of offense are you going to run?
Wide open offense with versatility. Get the ball in the hands of the playmakers. That's my philosophy. But not just RPOs with everything you see in college. I mean, you got to understand the personnel you have and run an offense based on what you have at hand.
That was Deion Sanders, and we're delighted to be joined by Jeff Shepherd. Jeff, you can understand why he was called Primetime. What a man.
Absolutely, guys. Yeah, you know, I mean, he has never been shy or... quite garrulous. I mean, he is a talker, always has been. You know, look, he was a phenomenal athlete in the 80s and 90s. You know, he played at Florida State, played football there, and then, you know, played Major League Baseball and in the NFL at the same time, played for the Atlanta Falcons and the Atlanta Braves. And so very confident in himself and his abilities, as he should be. I mean, he was a tremendous athlete. And he's really thrown himself into coaching and teaching the last couple of, you know, I'd say probably the last decade or so, as his kids have gotten older. And he's been living in Texas and been involved out there. And just this week, just kind of, you know, over this last week, made an announcement. He was going to be coming to Jackson State University. In America, we have schools, their acronyms are called HBCUs, Historically Black Colleges and Universities. And Jackson State is in Jackson, Mississippi, the capital city of the state of Mississippi, a proud football tradition. If you're a longtime NFL fan, that's where Walter Payton, the great running back for the Chicago Bears, you know, played his college football, and they've sent a ton of guys into the NFL from that school. And Deion announced it earlier this week, and so did the school, that he's going to be their next head coach. And so he'll be moving to Mississippi, and he's already kind of making, you know, some noise, because one of the defensive backs at Mississippi State, this was in the SEC, has decided to opt out at Mississippi State, and he's going to transfer to Jackson State because he wants to play for Deion Sanders. And so that's exactly why he was hired. You know, with no real head coaching experience or really collegiate coaching experience, but with a name like that, that's exactly what's going to attract players to a school like Jackson State. So it's already, you know, starting to pay off dividends for the school.
And what about his son? Is there a vacancy for a quarterback?
There was always a vacancy for a quarterback at any, you know, at school. I mean, you know, it's one of those things you can never have enough. I mean, you know, most colleges try to recruit one quarterback every year. During their, when they're out there signing players, for the future, you're always trying to get a quarterback in because you just never know. You just never know what's going to happen with guys transferring and people getting hurt. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if his son will follow him, Jackson State. I mean, obviously that would be a tremendous win for that program. But if he's getting, looks at Miami and Florida State, you would think that's where he would go. But again, time will tell.
Shab, here, when you look at sports like soccer and rugby and Gaelic games, a lot of former players go down the coaching road and, they often start in lower leagues and work their way up. Is it not the case with NFL?
So it's interesting. Lots of times you'll see, maybe guys, maybe they have like a cup of coffee is the saying over here. That's like maybe they're not all pro players, they're not superstars. But, maybe they were a lineman for a couple of years in the league or a wide receiver, and then they kind of get into the coaching of the game and then work their way up through the ranks. Look, I mean, there's only 32 of these jobs in America, to be a head coach in the NFL. So, it's a little bit more difficult there. It seems to happen a little bit more in the NBA. Steve Nash just got hired, and he kind of, as he said, his playing experience helped him skip the line. But, I think former players have a little bit more success at the collegiate level than at the collegiate coaching level than they do in the NFL. But there are certainly coaches, in the NFL that have played or had a little bit of time as a player in the NFL and then got into, if you could get into an NFL job, an assistant coach or an analyst job at a pretty young age and hang on, you're going to be able to be in the league for a long time. And that's certainly the case.
Shab, it was great to have the NFL back, and we'll speak about your New Orleans Saints in a while, but there was an awful lot of injuries and coaches and maybe players putting it down to a lack of preseason or shortened training camps. What's going on?
Well, and not only, guys, was it, a lot of injuries. It was injuries to star football players in the NFL. I mean, you're talking Saquon Barkley, the premier player in New York City. Tears his ACL and he's out for the season. Nick Bosa, one of the best defensive players in the league, playing with the San Francisco 49ers, he tears his ACL, he's done for the year. Christian McCaffrey with the Panthers, potentially the best, one of the best offensive weapons in the game. Not potentially, he is one of the best offensive weapons in the game. Sprains his ankle and he's going to miss, about a month. Jimmy Garoppolo, the quarterback of the 49ers, the Super Bowl runners-up last year, he sprains his ankle. The 49ers also had two other running backs get hurt. I mean, it was a bad, bad day for those guys. So, again, it wasn't just the number of injuries. It was the types of injuries and the players that were injured, I think really kind of set off the warning signs. And, yes, there wasn't any preseason games. There were a few, preseason practices, maybe a couple of ones where teams got together for a day or two, and that typically isn't the case. They typically get together outside of the games and do some live hitting and some live drills and all that, and none of that happened this year. It was just, kind of controlled workouts with your team, and it's a real high number of injuries. Now, look, it could just be a freak thing, and that's kind of the way that, the dice fell this year, but it's kind of hard to ignore the corona issue and the lack of preparation and Donners. I mean, you could speak to it. You don't just show up, the day of your first rugby match and just go out there and, jump into a scrum. You've been practicing for a month or so. It used to not be like that in American sports. In the 1940s and 50s, baseball players, they worked in the – even NFL players, they worked in the offseason. They had second jobs because of the money. They didn't get paid like they got paid today. And that's what training camp was for. Training camp lasted a month or a month and a half to get your body back into shape. They didn't have that this year, and unfortunately we're seeing a lot of injuries.
Shep, all those injuries I can understand. They happen on the pitch. They're active. They're running around. They haven't done their training. That is totally fine. But Tyrod Taylor's injury, that one now has completely blown my mind.
Yeah. I mean, and look, I mean, this is a freak accident. I mean, the Tyrod Taylor is not angry at the doctor. I mean, his coach spoke yesterday, but he has, I think he has a cracked rib or cracked ribs. And he was going in to go get, a pain, something to help him with the pain, a steroid shot. because look, he's going to go out and play quarterback in the NFL. That's a pretty dumb thing to go do if you have, you know, cracked ribs. But, you know, he was going to go do it anyway because that's his job. And he goes to the pregame to get a shot, and the team doctor accidentally punctured his lung. So just before the game starts, they throw in a rookie quarterback, Justin Herbert, the backup from Oregon. And, you know, no one really knew what was going on. And then the reports came out that he wasn't going to play because of his ribs. And then it came out after the game that the doctor had punctured his lung. Again, completely a freak accident. But it's just something that's going to have the Chargers are going to have to deal with for the next couple of weeks until he gets healthy. And look, all Herbert did was go out and almost lead them to a win over the Kansas City Chiefs. He played very well. He made just one or two mistakes, and they kind of cost him in the end. They lose in overtime. Not a bad effort, considering kind of how he was thrown in there to get his first career start.
Well, it's amazing. Whatever about football or sport in general, just medical advice, do no harm. It seems crazy that a player would want to go out onto the pitch and, mask pain. Always find it really odd. Shep, we have to speak about your own team, the Saints. They went down to the Raiders 34-24. But in typical modern sport, we're not going to chat about the game or the player's performance. It's the coronavirus coaching breaches by the coaches. Can you tell us a little bit what went on with them not wearing their masks?
Yeah, so both of the coaches, I think, on Monday night, John Gruden for the Raiders and Sean Payton for the Saints, got fined. They were not the only coaches in the league. You had Pete Carroll on Sunday night for the Seahawks. And some of the other coaches as well got fined. The league basically was a little lax with them in week one with the wearing of the mask down on the field. And in week two, they said, look, it's 2 weeks. You know how to do this. You need to, you know. And so they are fining the coaches $100,000, and they're fining the franchises $250,000. And so you would think if you're a repeat offender, you're going to get fined even more. I think it's an interesting question, though, to think about. And I mean, you know, the league's going to have its own rules, and you have to follow them. But if every player and every person that's down on the field has had to be checked within the previous, 24 to 48 hours and had their temperature taken, and everyone down there on the field has tested negative and so far doesn't have the virus, why exactly do the coaches have to wear the mask?
Well, I can tell you, there's a show over here called Ireland's Fittest Family, and we were shooting it the other week, and Davy Fitz had a mask on, and he was shouting abuse at me from miles away, and I couldn't hear a word of it. And I'll be honest with you, Shep, I was quite glad. Shep, we'll catch up with you next week. Mind yourself, enjoy the weekend. Thanks for joining us on Game On. We're going to take a quick break, and we're back chatting about Dundalk's big game.
With Green Firm, naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
So I get you're traumatised after the maggots.
Oh, absolutely. I heard it on Jennifer Zamparelli, but oh my God, maggots in your pillow. Do you know one time we were on tour in Australia and we found a dead lizard on the way home and it became christened Lizzie, and we kept putting it in people's wash bags and gear bags, and Lizzie was on tour for close on maybe 2 weeks, but I didn't know, unknowns to myself, I actually slept with Lizzie for 4 nights in a row. She was in my pillowcase.
Oh, I don't even know where to go from there, but we are going to go to football because Dundalk are continuing their European exploits very, very shortly, actually, against Moldovan side Sheriff. It's their third round Europa League qualifier. And to look ahead to that game, we are joined by former League of Ireland footballer Conan Byrne. Conan, I think it's one of those games that nobody really knows what to expect because we're not too familiar with Moldovan football.
No, we aren't. But at the same time, this Sheriff team are going to be a very, very good team. They've got good pedigree playing in European football. They've won 18 of the last 20 Moldovan Premier Leagues, and it's actually the first time that Dundalk have faced Moldovan opposition as well. But it's going to be a very difficult game, Marie. It's 21 international players in their squad, and I've picked out three that are probably going to be the ones to watch. Based through the spine of the team as well, Vyacheslav Pazmach, strong Commodore centre half. He'll be marshalling in the defence like a general, and he's a Moldovan international. And they really have to look out for their striker, Frank Castaneda. He's a Colombian centre-forward. He's been recently signed from a Slovakian league where he wasn't much of a goal scorer. But this season now, he's just taken the mantle on hugely for the Moldovan champions, like 10 goals and 9 appearances. So he'll be their main goal threat tonight. And also they have Dimitris Kolovos, who's a Greek international, signed from Panathinaikos. So he's going to be a very, very good player. So it's going to be, Dundalk will need to be playing at a very high level to win this game, and a level that they haven't reached yet this season.
Well, when you think that they've changed things around now and they have their new Italian manager, Gio Vagnoli, has he made much of an impact? Can he do enough in that short time to bring them to that level that they need to get to?
See, I don't think they have been tested, Marie, in those three games since he's come in. Yes, they've won the three of them. Like, they played Cove Ramblers, the mid-table team in the first division in the FAI Cup. They won that 2-0. They played Shelburne, then a lower half Premier Division team who have struggled to score goals all season. And they managed to score two against them at Oriel Park. However, Dundalk did win the game 3-2. And then last week they played Escaldes from Andorra. Now, they won the game 1-0, but by all accounts they should be hitting that caliber of team for 5 or 6. So tonight is a real test. Like, 3 wins from 3 in any competition as a new manager is always going to be a positive. And he seems to have reignited a confidence in their attacking threat. I'm really looking forward to seeing Michael Duffy tonight. You saw his goal against Shelburne last week. It was a tremendous strike from 25, 30 yards. And he hasn't been doing that this season. So I'd like to think now that going forward, that the attacking threat will be there.
Conor, just on that, like, since the restart, it has been frustrating for Dundalk. Is this exactly what they need? You know, something like Europa League to show that, you know, that they're probably better than what they've been playing in the league?
I think so, Dunica. I think, like, last week, as I said, the game against Andorra pushed them on and gave them €280,000 in their back pockets as well for getting through that game. And this is going to be a whole different test. They played Celje a couple of weeks ago, and they lost, unfortunately, in that game in the Champions League qualifiers. But this is going to be a stiffer test again. But the fact that they have, on the back of 3 consecutive wins, will give them huge confidence. Gio Vagnoli has made a couple of surprises to team selections over the last couple of weeks. He dropped Gary Rogers, which was a huge surprise, bringing in Aaron McCary. But sometimes, Dunica, you know yourself, playing rugby, sometimes you need a little kick in the backside, and that's probably what Gary Rogers exactly needed. And Sean Gannon as well. Sean Gannon is going to be heading towards the most decorated player in League of Ireland history, and he's omitted him from the starting 11 in the last 3 games as he was struggling for form. So he's not afraid to make these calls, and Sean has been given the chance now to play in the game tonight. And the Moldovan down the left-hand side are going to be really difficult, and he's put in two full-backs there. Sean Horby playing right-back and Sean Gannon in right midfield to combat the Moldovan threat.
OK, so call it for us, Conan.
Oh, God, Marie. my heart is obviously saying Dundalk on penalties. My head is saying Sheriff in normal time.
Yeah, Conan, we'll go with your heart then. So thanks so much for joining us, Game On. Bet Dundalk, we're back tomorrow night at 6, but Tara Stewart is up next with the best of new music.
Live across the nation, this is RTE 2FM.